Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talk is Jericho.
So tell us about some of the scary episodes and some of the situations that you've had so far this season.
Oh, gosh.
Absolutely nuts. Well, we started with Catherine Gleason, who lived alone in the woods, 35 acres, frightened for over a decade. And we were able to figure out that it, spoiler alert, we were able to figure out that, you know, there were a couple of entities in the house, and one of which was a little girl, and she used to keep them in the back room and not open that door and say, you have to stay here. So imagine telling a real 3-year-old girl that for 10 years.
So the lady who lived in the house told the ghost to stay in there?
Yeah, because she was so afraid of it. But once we were able to kind of pinpoint that's what was happening and who it was, she, you know, went in that room and said, I'm sorry. I don't mean to treat you like this. And, you know, we've gotten word from her that everything is going well and everything is...
How do you find this stuff out? Like, first of all, for a decade of being terrorized, I mean, she hasn't said anything to anybody or nobody cares or they think she's nuts? Or
she did. I think for her what happened was, and what we have found in a few cases, is she had kids and as they grew up, they moved out and... Then that's when she really started noticing things because, you know, when kids are in the house, it's just like a blur. There's noise and stuff, and you're easily going to miss that your house could be haunted. But then when they left, she noticed these things happening. And so that's why she kind of put up with it for the last 10 years or so. And then she talked to her kids and they said, oh, you didn't notice all this going on? So, but yeah, I mean, that it's intense research. That's how we come up with, you know, who it could be. I mean, in that case, we found out there had been a sawmill right next to her property and that a 3-year-old girl had died, had been sawed in half in a terrible accident in the 40s. And it was very traumatic for her to find out, you know, I'm a mom of a, you know, she's now 4, but at the time she was 3. And I just, that story just did not sit well with me for the longest time. And that's happened so many times where we go into these homes and they expect it to be this loved one. And then we find out it's somebody completely different. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a case in Connecticut where this family, they were being scratched. They were, you know, they were having things broken on a regular basis. I mean, this was kind of almost a violent haunting. And we found out before there was a man who had rented the house who was a raging alcoholic and all the neighbors knew about him and he died in the house. And we got these EVPs that were like, I need quiet, you know, trying to freak us out. And he wanted his house back and they kept, you know, doing all these changes to it and stuff. And so these are the things we're finding out. And it's wild.
I mean, yes. And we also found out there was an unsolved murder that was 130 years to the date that we were at the house that happened up the hill from the property. Like, I'm sorry, what? And people in the area have similar activity based on this entity that is connected to this unsolved murder that was happening 130 years ago to the day we are in the house.
Right, it's insane.
And you can't plan it. You literally can't plan it because we uncover all of the stuff. And the thing is, like, when we investigate that first night, we might not get a lot of activity. So we go, what do? So we go to historical societies. We go to the library. We go to the deeds office. We look at, we uncover every possible thing that we can use in our investigation to put us in that right direction of who's actually there. And then we keep piling it on and piling it on. And then, you know, by the fifth day, we have this awesome, like, private eye investigation of a ghost. And we figured it out, like, and hopefully given them answers.
So then are you going in there with this information? Are you having personal encounters with the entities that are in there?
Oh, we do. Yeah, for sure. I mean, we always start with what the family's experiencing. They tell us what has happened to them and we go in and investigate right away and see what happens to us, you know, see what kind of evidence we can gather. And then using what they've told us and what evidence we've gathered, we wake up first thing the next day and start researching and see what other paths we can go down. And so it is super intense. And, you know, sometimes these entities are like, you know, they're not into us being there at all. And so they're trying to scare us off. Sometimes they want to talk to us because we always have the family introduce us to them. As soon as we get there, we have them sit down and say, this is Amy and Adam, and this is why they're here. If you want to talk, they're friends of mine. And so it kind of opens up this line of communication. So if it is somebody that they're familiar with, things will start happening with us almost immediately. So yeah, we've had lots of experiences.
What kind of stuff is happening?
You know, the one in Connecticut we were talking about before with the shoebox murder is what we found out happened on their property. We got there, and literally as soon as I went downstairs to set up the cameras, I was all by myself, and something just started whispering in my ear. I mean, and it's very disconcerting when you hear what sounds like a human voice coming from a place where like a mouth would be, but there's nothing there. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was just almost immediate. And, you know, we've had other instances like that where they just, I'm trying to think of another big moment for us.
They do things to like get our attention. They like bang on things that are right in front of you.
That's right.
Once we know, for instance, like if we're trying, there was a case that we did outside of Boston, and we needed to know things about this person that had passed, that was murdered in the basement of this house. And so, you know, the homeowner informed us that her brother, who was murdered, liked matchbox cars and liked dollar bills. He had a handicap, and he only could count in dollars. And so we would use those to interact with them. So we put up these dollars on the side, and we put up these matchbox cars, and we get EVPs, you know, from the voice recorder that it sounds like whoosh, whew, and it sounds like an adult male playing with matchbox cars, and the dollars that we set up fall over and like get pushed down, like somebody put their hand flat on top of the dollar.
And you're seeing this.
And we catch it on our camera. And that to us tells us that we are speaking with this person because it is exactly what the character traits that the individual had. The homeowner identifies the voice and says, "Oh my God, that sounds just like my brother." And you know, we are using things that would trigger a reaction, and I think those are the most interesting things to us because we don't expect that. We are using everything we possibly can, and for this to happen, it literally blows my mind.
Yeah, I mean, we had no idea. When that EVP came through, it would sound like an adult playing with cars. We didn't understand it. We were like, what does this mean? You know, and we played it for the client, and she instantly said, you know, that's Eric, that's my brother. She knew immediately, and those were like the exact sounds he made, and we had no way of knowing that. And so when you get that crazy confirmation, it's, you know, we still get goosebumps
That's
when that
incredible.
Happens.
Yeah, to hear that. Now, just explain, and we've talked about this quite a few times with a lot of my paranormal guests, but the EVP is the electronic voice projection.
Phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. But this is not something that you're hearing when you go in the house. You're recording, and then you go back and listen to it afterwards?
Well, we do it real time. So we will record, you know, for a couple minutes and ask some questions, then we listen right there. Because we have a recorder that it only records if it hears something. So it's a lot quicker for us to actually play it back. Mm-hmm. And so we'll talk to something and then get an answer a couple minutes later and just keep going and based on what they tell us. So we can have a full conversation with a ghost, and that's what... you know, the recorder we have, it's this crazy recorder from like the 90s that they don't make anymore. We have to find it on eBay.
We paid a lot of money, but
it gets results, and it's amazing what we hear with this thing. And so, yeah, it's we do immediate playback.
So it's almost like, you know, if you have a voice app on your phone and you're sending voice messages and you wait until you hear the boop and you go check out your voicemail, that's what you're basically doing.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But with this old, you know, this old machine that you mentioned.
Yep.
Why is it not something that you can hear via human ear? It can only be recorded on this box.
There's a lot of theories about that. I mean, EVP has been around for so long. People noticed it, you know, doing recordings, gosh, back in like the 60s, and they would play things back and there'd be kind of voices that weren't there originally. And so we don't know why. We don't know if it's just like one of those kind of infrasound things where we don't hear it with our ear, you know, like maybe
like
your dog hears something and that certain recorders pick it up better than others or what. I mean, there's a lot of people who are a lot more technologically advanced than we are that might have better better ideas, but we just know. We just run with it because it works. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, especially, you know, it works when it's giving you names that you have already, like, you haven't researched yet, and then the names come up as, like, the previous homeowner. There was a case in, was it Connecticut again, where we were looking.
Oh, gosh, yes.
We were looking for, we kept looking for their family and looking for their family. We're getting nothing, getting nothing, getting nothing. And so Amy started rattling off previous homeowners. As like, you know, who are you? And we get an EVP that says Kotek, which was his last name. And then it's like, are you Mr. Kotek? Yes. And like this guy was from Poland. He didn't speak any English. And so that's why he wasn't interacting with us. So we, what do? Find a Polish translator at a Polish diner.
We had our producers. They were, you know, we said we need a translator because this guy was Polish and he I spoke with his brother and he said he didn't, or his son, he didn't speak any English. And so I said, well, I need a translator. And our producers were trying to find a translator. And I'm like, look, Little Poland is down the street. There's a neighborhood called Little Poland. Yep. Somebody down there speaks Polish. Nope. And so our producer literally just walked into a restaurant and was like, I need someone who speaks Polish. And the owner's wife, came like, down. Here she comes. She was amazing.
Did you tell her what you're doing?
Oh, yeah.
She was totally into it.
And she also worked for the town, so she knew all about the Polish immigrants that from this time period, could give us backstory on like who they might have been and why he might have been there.
Mm-hmm. She knew the company he worked for, and we found out where he worked. He said where he worked in an EVP. We said, where do you work? And he said, Atlantic Tool, which was the company he worked for. And then she told us that nobody spoke English there. They only spoke Polish.
Wow. And so, of course, he could work there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane things like that. Like, you know, it's happening and you know it's working because we didn't know any of this information and it's coming and there it is. And it's completely bizarre. And it's why we do it. I mean, we do it to help the families, clearly. It's not about us, but there is this like adrenaline rush that you get when you're on that right path to like the truth.
What is it about Connecticut, New England area? You mentioned it earlier. There's so much activity around here. I even did a pilot. I might have told you about the Bridgewater Triangle, which is just down the road. But there's so much action up around this area. Any ideas?
I just think it's the history. I think it's been, you know, it's one of the oldest parts of the country and so much has happened here. And there's just, there's just something about New England. I mean, like I've said before to paranormal investigators, like New England is like what Hollywood is to actors. Like I lived in California and I moved there for the ghost.
Right.
And, you know, I think between this and the South, like you get to New Orleans and stuff and kind of the same thing. It's very, very haunted. But I think those are probably the most haunted areas of the country.
Yeah.
So
tell us some more about what we've experienced on Kindred Spirits, because you mentioned before that the initial idea was to talk to families that thought they had relatives, but we've heard some other ones like with the shoebox murders and all this, that there are other people. Tell us some about where it actually was their family members.
Well, there was the case that we did in, I mean, we did so many, we traveled so many, with the one with Chip, but I feel like her grandmother passed away in the house. And she did not speak to her grandmother for how long was it? Like 10 years?
It was this very. You really learn a lot about family dynamics doing this. But they had. She and her grandmother were super close. Like her grandmother practically raised her, and they had a falling out, very random, and they hadn't spoken in like years, 10 years or something, but she never understood why, and so then. She ended up buying the house that her grandmother had died in because her family kind of talked her into it.
Right.
But then all this crazy stuff started happening.
Her master bedroom was where her grandmother died. Yeah. And so she's like, is my grandmother here? And is she causing these problems? And we were able to determine that she was there, but she wasn't like trying to do anything. Like she wasn't trying to like hurt her family. You know, she didn't care. I mean, it was from Chip's point of view. I think he said, she doesn't care. I mean, that like what passed is passed, and like she's passed away, and that let's move on from this kind of like situation.
And it's not, you know, these are the kind of things where they bring out photos again. You know, these are people that they were so estranged from, but now she actually hung up some of her grandmother's belongings in the house again, and you know, acknowledged that she was there. And then the activity really slows down for them. So sometimes it's just as simple as kind of mending those fences and things. You know, we don't cross people over. People always ask us, why don't you send them to the light? Or because we haven't done that, but we've been around it many times, and then we've come back, you know, weeks, months, you know, years later, and that ghost is still there. And so we don't ever see that working, but what we have seen work time and time again is getting their message across, finding out why they're still lingering, and kind of giving them those answers. And the next thing you know, the activity either goes away or really slows down. So I think there's something more to kind of figuring out the mystery as to why they're there than actually just saying, no, move on. Everything's fine, you know?
So. I mean, I think the episode that's coming up is a prime example of families thinking that it is a family member. And, you know, maybe it is, but which family member is the surprise? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to give too much away, but it's... and that they weren't even, that wasn't even on their radar. Like it wasn't on anyone's radar. And because of the activity leading us to a certain, you know, outcome, like this activity gave us clues, which led us to a certain person.
Right, right,
and
right.
So it's like, you know, I think really you can have an idea of who is there based on what's happening sometimes, but sometimes you have no idea. Most of the time you have no idea.
Most of the time.
Until you get
and what did you mean when you said you're not crossing them over?
Well, many people theorize that these ghosts are stuck and that they need to be told they can move on or maybe bring in, you know, clergy or whatever and pass them over, cross them to the light. You know, people say that a lot. Send them to the light. They need to be...
But do you have the power to do that?
I don't believe so. Right. Because I've seen it so many times where people claim to do it. Maybe people bring in psychics and mediums. And we obviously have nothing against psychics and mediums because we use them, but I don't really believe in that theory just because I've seen it not work in too many instances. And the last thing I want to do is give these ghosts some false hope, you know? So it's a lot more work to find out why they're here, and that's what we do. And I think, though, that has proven results for these people versus just telling them to leave. You know, we come in and say, hey, we get it. You know, you have this message for so-and-so, or, you know, you just want to be here with your family, or, you know, oh, you're not their family, but you're here because of this. Whatever the case may be, once they get that recognition, so many times the activity just really boils down or stops completely. Mm-hmm. So that to me is proven versus just crossing something over blindly, you know?
So you're like basically saying once you kind of address whatever their problem is, then they go away.
Yeah.
Right. You've been calling me, you know, you've been saying grandmother's been moving glasses again and I'm not your grandmother. I'm the guy who owned the property 200 years ago.
Yeah.
So now that I've been acknowledged and now that you know that, I'm going to like let you chill out for a minute.
Really?
Yeah.
Or the woman who, there was one woman who was convinced that the ghost in her house was the former owner who had committed suicide upstairs in the upstairs bedroom.
Right.
Come to find out, no, this woman had brought, you know, a lot of belongings from her grandmother with her into the house. And these were things her grandmother was very attached to that she had actually made herself, these like clay pottery things. And her grandmother was there watching over her. And she remembered that this woman, you know, she would go back to her grandmother's grave regularly and clean it up. And she was the only one in the family doing it. Go back, clean it up. And her grandmother brought that up as we were investigating that she saw her doing that, you know. And so this was a shock to her because she thought it was something completely different. Mm-hmm. But no, it was a loved one. And so her too, things have kind of died down a bit since she's, you know, let her know, oh, I know, I think they called her Nana, Nana, I know you're here. And she talks to her and things and, you know, it's just not been as extreme.
And I think that case was surprising for us too, because we were, not only were we able to help the person actually living in the house, but we were able to help the daughter of the person that committed suicide because we had to get in contact. We wanted to know more about the person who, you know, died in the house. And so we got in contact with the daughter. The daughter came over. We assured her that we weren't doing anything malicious. Like we weren't making fun of the person that died. And we'd be being very respectful. And I think that was great closure for that person because they literally just up and left the house and never came back. They
had
belongings.
There were still tons of their things were in the basement. And so she came over and got everything out. Because I think that woman, she had like four or five kids and just, it was very unexpected. She was very well loved in the community. And so this happened and literally the family, like Adam said, just left.
Right. And all of this stuff was in the basement.
Yeah.
And they had one of those like height charts from when they were growing up. And so we had Amy had a contractor friend of hers come in and take out the thing and put a new one and give it to her because, you know, it's things that you can't ever replace. And I think that was, we were able to really help two different families in one case and we never knew that was going to be happening.
It's interesting to me because I remember this from last time when we spoke, Amy, that this happens to you guys so much. It's part of your job. It's like, you know, when you're seeing these things, it's like, oh yeah, then grandma was there and we moved this over here and did this. Do you ever get scared? Has anything ever scared you recently, you know, or is it now just kind of par for the course and you know things are going to go bump next to you or people are going to be whispering in your ear, does it still creep you out at all?
Sometimes. I mean, I think we got creeped out. There was we got an EVP like two or three times over the course of the season.
Yeah.
It was the same voice just randomly. I don't even know that we played it on the show. I don't think we do just because it didn't have to do with the case. But we kept getting this EVP with the same voice. It says, Amy, Adam.
Yeah, same voice. Same voice.
It just
wow.
And
no matter what house you're in?
No matter what. And so we know this thing, whatever it is. I don't know that it's like, I don't ever have anything weird happen in my house. So I don't know that it's like, you know, haunting us or if it just kind of pops in and I don't know what it is.
Or if it's hitchhiking with us.
It's
like coming
very
to,
strange.
But it's the same voice. And so we sit there and we're trying to reach, you know, Uncle Joe. And all of a sudden this thing comes through again and we're like, oh, God.
There's that thing.
There's that thing again. And so then we have to address it and we have to, you know, kind of figure out what that is. I mean, maybe season two, we'll figure it out.
But I know.
Like, it's kind of creepy, though, when it's saying your names.
Yeah, over and over again. And it's very, I mean, I have no idea who it is, why they're, I mean, we're both very strong people. We don't really, we're not worried about having like attachments or, you know, negative things latching onto us or bringing things home or anything like that. But we notice it and we're like, I wonder who that is.
Yeah. But, and I think it's different. Like we've had things that say like, you know, hey, Adam, or like, hey, Amy, like when it learns your name, it talks to you and it's done that before. But this particular thing, just saying our names in sequence and it being with us in the first case. And then there was another case and then there was the case in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's like a couple of times that it just, I don't know what its purpose is. And that to me is a little, it's a little off-putting, but not necessarily frightening. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, all right, now, should we give our attention to this person? And if we don't, will the activity increase? I mean, only time will tell. Yeah.
Will it stop?
Will it stop, or will they just get more frustrated and try to reach out more? And
because it seems like a lot of these, a lot of what you're dealing with are not malevolent spirits. They're just, you know, maybe lost in the wrong place or just want some attention. Has there been times when like you've had to go to cases where people are terrified over the stuff that's going on?
Many of these people.
And ghost hunters at all?
Yeah. I mean, a lot. I mean, many of these people, it's stuff that we see every day. So we're kind of not jaded, but we're used to
it. Sure. Oh, the table levitated. Fine.
Yeah, no big deal.
Right.
Yeah,
no big deal. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. For you guys, it's no big deal. But for me, I'd be flipping out.
If somebody knocked on this wall, people would be like, oh my God. I'm like, you guys, come nuts. Just
well, sure. It's just like, you know, getting suplexed off the top rope. It's like, exactly. That must kill you. And it's like, well, it really doesn't. It's just kind of what you do.
Yeah, but if you suplex me, I'm done.
Right. And if I go on an excursion with you guys and someone whispers in my ear, I'll see you outside 50 feet away.
Yeah, goodbye.
Right? So yes. There are terrifying, you know, people are terrified by some of these things. Like tell us about, so like, what's the scariest experience that you've ever seen somebody have or you've experienced yourself?
Well, I think anytime we have kids involved, that's when it really kind of ups the ante for us.
Like live kids. Ghost kids?
You know, when anybody has children that are being freaked out, it just kind of makes it more intense for us, especially me as a mom. Like, you know, we did a case in New Britain, Connecticut, where these people were living in this kind of tenement house and they owned the whole thing. And grandma lived on the bottom floor. Mm-hmm. And then one woman and her boyfriend and son lived on the second. And then her other daughter lived on the top floor. And it was her granddaughter, I think. I can't remember. But there's a little boy up there. And every night he would wake up and he kept seeing these crazy shadows in his room. And he told me, he was like, the monsters never go away. And he was genuinely freaked out. And when you have this little boy looking at you and you don't want to like say, oh, it's a ghost. You know, you don't want to put that idea in their head. But when you have a child that's seeing shadows in their room every night and totally terrified, like that just kind of makes things a little more intense.
The expression on a parent's face telling you these stories is like nothing you'll ever see because they are genuinely concerned for their child.
Sure.
And it's not necessarily, they're like, I can handle it. I'm going to handle it because I have to. But my kid is an innocent here. So what's happening? And I think that's probably the most terrifying I've ever seen a homeowner.
Yeah, it's when there's kids. You know, even we did a case in Pittsburgh where this woman, her son kept waking up and hearing something breathing over him. And, you know, she was really great in the fact, and we always tell parents, you know, don't say the G word, don't say ghost, you know, don't act like it's a big deal. Just wait and see if they're really freaked out. But he would come into their room and, you know, climb into bed with mom and dad because something kept like breathing in his ear while he was trying to sleep. And that helpless look in a parent's eyes, you know, because as a parent, you know, you want to be there for your kids and have all the answers, but in that case they don't, and it's hard to see, but it's great because we can come in and almost instantly go, okay, let's, you know, take it down a notch, everything's gonna be fine, we're gonna take care of it. But they'll live with this for years before they say anything, because they're embarrassed or they're scared
that people think they're crazy.
I mean, I think other things that people experience like can be explained naturally, like there was a lady who said that she woke up and couldn't move and felt like somebody was like sitting on her chest. And
you hear that quite a bit.
Right. And like something was hovering over her, but she didn't see anything, but she just felt it and she couldn't move. And she was having a panic attack from it. And really all of those things that she's telling us is a prime example of sleep paralysis. It's something that happens. It's where you wake up and you just can't move and you sort of have this panic moment, but it's your brain just doesn't kick in yet. And people associate it with something being paranormal. So she was completely terrified. She was like, that was the most terrifying experience I've ever had in this house, besides the shadow people and besides objects disappearing and moving and besides me hearing footsteps. But we were able to kind of give her information on what sleep paralysis is. It had never happened again or prior, and it was this one moment, and it can be caused by stress. And so we're like, you know, if it continues to happen, then go to a sleep therapist, like go to a doctor.
That's a rational.
Right.
Right.
But yeah.
Completely frightened, because if you don't know what that is,
of
if
course.
You're not clued into it, it's scary. It's absolutely terrifying. And that's not paranormal. And we're able to help families that way too, which is good.
Kindred Spirits airs Friday nights at 10 Eastern, 9 Central on TLC. The season finale this Friday, it is terrifying. Amy Bruni and Adam Berry are the creators and co-hosts of the show, and they do all of the paranormal investigating themselves. So what do you guys call yourselves?
Investigators. Paranormal investigators.
Paranormal investigator.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
We're like the
ghost therapists.
We're like the ghost Mulder and Scully.
Yeah, we do get a lot of Mulder and Scully lately.
Yeah. Which not is a bad cool. call.
No, yeah,
that's all right. Yeah,
I like it. I'll take
it. Actually, especially if they just renewed the series, that's good for you guys.
Real life X-Files.
Tell us about when you're filming a show. Like, if you do an episode, does it take a week to get what you need for the episode, or are you out of there in 2 days?
Oh no, it takes. Yeah, it's about, I would say, a solid 5 days. Mm. And we do keep our cases in the New England area for the most part, just because this is where we live, and it's hard for me to get away from my family. And, you know, Adam's got all his stuff going on with his theater company. And so, but that being said, we're still there solidly for a good 4 or 5 days. And I mean, honestly, it's kind of as long as it takes. I mean, at the end of 5 days, if we still didn't feel like we had an answer, we'd be like, well, we got to stay here another day
or
two.
And we can do that.
Yes.
We can pull our EP power.
Yes.
We need to stay an extra day.
That's a good thing. As long as
the family's okay with it, you know.
As long as they're not sick of us by then.
Are they staying in the house with you at that time?
No. They come in and out. We have them investigate with us a lot, because whatever's there is familiar with them more than us. And especially if it's someone they love, if we have the equipment there that can actually hear this ghost, if they're with us, that really is helpful. So they'll come investigate, but most of the time we put them up in hotels, and they're welcome to come in and out at any time. But we also, you know, sometimes, you know, like we were doing that case in Pittsburgh where we got this piece of evidence where we were doing an EVP session in the woman's bedroom, and we were like, you know, what's in the closet? And all of a sudden we get this EVP of this scream, like this blood-curdling scream in our recorder. And we thought, gosh, we don't even want to show this to her. She's gonna. Yeah. She was already so freaked out. So if she had been there at that time, that probably wouldn't have been great.
Right.
That's the kind of stuff we kind of keep to ourselves until we know for sure what our answers are going to be at the end. So that's why we don't encourage them to stay. But, you know, we're not going to tell somebody, you know, get out.
Right.
But,
and the families are also, like, family members are also there during the daytime for us to interview them and talk to them about their experiences more than the tour. Like, we do the tour with them and they tell us what's happening, but we also have a chance to sit down with them one-on-one and pick their brain. And usually this is like the day after the first investigation, the first night, or maybe, you know, this the third day, we can ask them more questions based on things that we found. We've called homeowners in the middle of cases by phone, in the middle of investigation by phone, to find out about certain objects that are in a place. So they're always available, and we don't ever shut them out. We're very transparent about mm-hmm. what we're doing and how we're doing it, so that they feel comfortable. The neighborhood feels comfortable because they still have to live there when we
yeah.
leave.
Right.
And we are very open about what we're doing.
So when you're filming, I mean, obviously you guys are kind of down with it. You know what's going on. Do you have a crew that's there filming with you? And I would assume that probably some of them are just guys on the clock making some yeah. cash, you know, doing their job that don't believe. Have you ever seen a crew member get freaked out by some of the stuff
many
you've seen?
Many times, yeah. What's great about our show is we do kind of break that fourth wall. You'll see our camera operators in shots a lot. We don't hide them.
Right.
And they have...
What you're doing, you're filming.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And they have experiences. You know, we in New Hampshire, I was busy, you know, setting up a camera, and my camera operator all of a sudden just went like this because something was grabbing his camera and pulling it backward, and he mm-hmm. tells me, like, something just grabbed my camera. And, you know, we had an AC right. in Connecticut who hadn't had a bloody nose in years, and then all of a sudden he just, like, randomly
out of nowhere
just got this, like, gushing bloody nose during the case. And you talk to him about
no,
it.
No, it was intense, and he was like, it's never happened. It hasn't happened in X amount of years. There was no reason for him to have it. It was the shoebox murder case. He was near the area where the murder had taken place. He was closer to that area. A lot of our crew members on that case, because we thought the entity was like messing with us, you know, a loud bang would happen, and the camera operator would just keep the camera there, but like peek out from the side mm-hmm. to be like, "Are you kidding? Are you kidding me?" Or like, they'll be like, "You know, it's right here. It's behind us." It's intense, and they do have experiences, and most of them brush it off.
Well,
and try
there
to
was
get
that
through
one.
It, but
there was one. I don't want to say what case it is because I don't want the neighborhood to freak out or anything. But there was one. One of the cases this season, as we were investigating, we all felt bad, and that, like,
oh,
we
God, yes.
felt sick in the house. We all felt like dizzy and nauseous, and and even the crew was affected. Mm. And all of us, we would just come out and we're like, I don't even want to be in there anymore. Yeah. Like, we just so. There was just something about that house. The family seemed fine in there, so we weren't really worried, but there was just an ugly feeling in there. And so, but at the end of that case, like, literally mm-hmm. at the end of that case, mm-hmm. I ended up in the ER with some crazy, like, leg, my yeah. back thrown out or whatever. And then one of our other camera operators, his back got thrown out. Our PA, this is within 3 days of leaving. Mm-hmm. Our PA had his appendix burst and had to get his appendix mm-hmm. removed. Our DP got Lyme disease. Adam lost his housing for his theater company.
For, like, the designers that were coming in to tech a musical that we were opening in like a week. All of that fell through completely.
Like, you lost the lease, it was like a
misunderstanding, but
gotcha.
I thought the hotel was booked, and in Provincetown in the summer, if you don't book months in advance like I did,
right.
you're screwed. And so I was like literally scrambling for housing, like all of a sudden scrambling for housing.
All of these things happened?
All yeah. of them happened literally within 3 days of leaving this house. And all of us, I remember telling Adam, like, I keep getting like panic attacks in this house. Mm-hmm. There was one night I had to get out of there. I just had like the craziest, yeah. just overwhelming feeling of, ooh, just icky. And it was, you know, again, the family was fine, and I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was just whatever was there wanted us out so badly. It was just like pushing this all on us. Mm-hmm. But that was really
strange. That's pretty terrifying to think about that. Like, mm-hmm. this is not just you go into the house and something falls off the wall. I mean, days later, you're getting sick. You're having
right,
bad luck, like cursed
right.
things.
Yeah. yeah.
That seems like you guys maybe got a little bit too close to where you were supposed to get.
Yeah, that was the first time that's ever happened for mm-hmm. me on a case. I don't think it was, I mean, having been there for 5 days, I definitely don't think it was something demonic or anything. I think it was just an energy. I think the energy had more to do with some of the people in the family than the actual ghosts there. There was just, again, not talking about who they were or anything. Right. I just think there was just some negativity there that was not healthy.
And I think it kind of just seeped out into our lives because we're there for so long. And I, you know, it's a hazard. Again, I'll say it. It's a hazard of the job. It's like, you know, I'm not comparing myself to anyone who does anything other than what we do. But like you go to work and you do things and you get sore, or you
Right, sure.
You know, you work late nights in a hospital and you are sleep deprived, and like things can occur from that. It's just a hazard of the job, except our hazards are unseen, it seems.
Well, and like I said, to think about some of these hazards, and you're talking about sometimes there's attachments, you know, you hear about that quite a bit. And it's not the house that's haunted, it's the person that's haunted or whatever it may be. Do you guys, like we didn't mention this a few times, but does it ever kind of like make you guys think like, are we doing the right thing here? Do we maybe try and get another gig, or is it okay, or you don't care? Or?
It's hard. And it's definitely not something I'll be able to do forever. I'm not afraid of attachments. It's more just continually exposing yourself to people who've had like terrible things happen. You know, a lot of these families have experienced tragedies, and it makes you very thankful for your own family and your own life. But obviously people who deal with like law enforcement and hospital, you know, nurses and things like that, like that's a whole different level of what they see traumatically and stuff. But it's kind of similar in some respect, in that you do keep seeing these terrible things over and over again, and then you start questioning like your own mortality and, you know, your life. And it's heavy sometimes. And you're like, gosh, I've just been surrounded by death for the last 4 or 5 days, and I just want to hug my baby. And like,
And I think that's why we rely on the experiences to kind of get us through, because we like the experiences, like the EVPs and like, I know, oddly enough, being touched or like seeing objects move, like those things are almost like lightheartedness to what we're actually dealing with. And again, these cases aren't about us. So it's about the families, and it's about helping these families and going in and making sure that they are okay. And you have to give a part of yourself up a little bit each time that you do it. And then we obviously, you know, rebuild it by I don't know, hanging out with each other.
Well, we're like the most cheerful paranormal investigators. People are always like, you guys are so happy. You look so normal. And
yeah, it could be 4 a.m. We were done with the investigative night. We will go back to the hotel and we will pop a bottle of wine.
Every time.
We will just kind of relax and talk about what was happening and talk about the case and drink wine and kind of mellow ourselves out a bit, because
I think you would have to, though, because like we said, we're not comparing it, but it would be like being on the police force or working in a emergency ward where there's so much negativity and so much heavy stuff going on that when you get home, I'm sure everybody does the same thing.
Right.
You know, it's
very, very stressful and you know, on your mind. Not even just physically.
When we were dealing with this family in Chelsea, you know, when this woman's, you know, looking at us and telling us how, you know, her brother was beaten to death by her other brother in the basement of their home, and she can't even go into that space anymore. And, you know, she's telling you this story and you start questioning, like, why am I here? Am I doing the right thing? You know, and that's the kind of heavy stuff you have to kind of work through, because yes, she's having very legitimate activity, but you don't want people to think that you're, you know, taking advantage of this terrible situation or whatever, you know, so there's all these moral questions that come up. But when they're so thankful at the end of it and they're crying and saying, you know, their life has changed, you're like, okay, this is good.
Yeah,
this is why I'm doing this.
And that's why we're filming our show the way we're filming it. It's very documentary based. So it's like, it's what you see is what you get. It's the case. It's how we're doing it. And nothing is added on, or there's no
embellishment,
flair to it. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It is like, this is what it is. And it has to be this way, because we are taking these people's lives into our own hands.
Last few questions. This is the $1 million question, but I have to ask, in your opinions, what are ghosts? What are these things? And
oh God.
I mean, the more I do this, I always say the less I know. I mean, it really, I do think it's something energy based. I don't know that in this lifetime I will know the answer. I hope that one day it will be explained by like quantum physics or something, but I do think it's energy based in some way, just because I see how often these things kind of interfere with our equipment and how they interact with our equipment. And so that's the best I can come up with. Some people want to put more of like a religious leaning on it, and think about life after death and all that. And I do think there's something to it, but I don't know that it's necessarily a religion more than something that's naturally occurring. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like some energy stays behind for certain people when they pass away.
Yeah, yeah, I think our consciousness somehow.
Yeah, we're all made up of the same thing. This table is made of the same thing we're made up of. So why wouldn't our energy be constantly moving in between the things that surround us? And I think people feed off of that energy. And I think when you die, I don't think that energy dissipates. I feel like it goes into something else. Some people maybe call it reincarnation. Maybe that's what it is. But it's we are getting information that these people had previous lives, though. We're getting names. We are getting information that no one would be able to know otherwise, like that we can verify through history and research. So, you know, this energy must have been a person at one point, I assume, because they're talking to us.
Right, right.
But a lot of, you know, some people, oddly, to talk about the weird things, you know, some people maybe think they're invisible time travelers from another dimension, or the interdimensional, like they
I've heard the dimension
they're
shifts.
They're us, but they are in a different time period, or they're aliens who are just observing our own world, or, you know, it could be a ton of different things. And hopefully, I mean, I would at least like to get 20% further to nothing before we become this energy. Yeah. You know?
I mean, it's amazing how many people think they know exactly what it is. We hear from them every day after the episode airs.
They're like, it's a demon.
That's a demon. We get that all the time.
Anything you're talking to is the devil.
Yeah, we get, you know, there are people who are just very set in what they think it is. And I think that in order to properly research it, you have to always have that kind of open mind.
I agree. Yeah.
You know?
So. It blows my mind, and I've said this before, how people who just completely don't believe it at all and won't even consider it, it's very arrogant. It'd be like, you know, to think there's no life after death or energy or
there's,
you know,
no life on other
life
planets.
On other planets, or life under the water, or life in the forest, or whatever it may be, just to say like, nope, when you die, that's it. I just find that to be very very short-sighted and very arrogant.
Yeah.
Like you said, you have to have an open mind to what's going on, not just for these supernatural things, but just in life in general.
Yeah,
because there's always things that you don't expect that happen. If you're paying attention, you'll pick it up a lot quicker, you know? Last question. What is your favorite episode of Kindred Spirits so far?
Oh, God.
I mean, I love all our families.
I love
I feel like we keep in touch with all of them. I would say probably the most fascinating one for me, it's a toss-up between Chelsea and the season finale, which hasn't aired yet. But it's
talk about Chelsea.
Chelsea is the one where it was the woman whose brother died in the basement, and she it was just a very close-knit family. And just as their stories kind of came out, and then we found out some really interesting history about the Chelsea fire that happened nearby, and her granddaughter had seen an apparition of a man dressed in like period clothing that just didn't fit any of the other ghosts, but we were able to verify this other crazy piece of history that happened. And and then just helping them, I felt like she really needed us, you know, even just after, at the end of everything, just getting that hug from her and seeing her actually get to go in her basement again, which she hadn't done in years, and to talk to her brother. It was just heart wrenching. So that one.
And is the brother gone now?
Yeah. I don't know if he's gone. I haven't heard from them. I know it's not as he was just, I think he was very mischievous, and I don't think she wanted to assume it was him. And she didn't know how to apologize because she left. They went on vacation and she left him in charge of the house. He wanted to stay behind and be in charge. And like Adam was saying, he had the mental capability of like a 12-year-old. And so he felt like the house was his. But then her other brother was a drug addict and he broke in while they were on vacation and, you know, killed beat him to death. And it was an awful, awful murder.
Yeah. Is that the Matchbox guy?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And so she just never grappled with that guilt. And so once she was able to hear him playing like he used to, she knew he was okay. And it was just, and she's very religious too. And it's not often we get called in by people who are super religious. But it was just this weight off her mind. So that would probably be my favorite. And then the season.
You know, I agree. I mean, I think all of our cases are completely unexpected. Obviously we show up, we don't know what we're going to get. And I think they're fascinating what we find out. I think, the case with Megan and her grandmother, I think that is to me, it's what it's all about, because she had no idea that it was going to be her grandmother. Neither did we. She thought it was the previous homeowner who committed suicide, and she was terrified of that. But to get that acknowledgement that it is her grandmother, that her grandmother appreciates the things that she does for her grandmother, even though she's passed, like she would clean up the grave.
Right, right.
She would do. She had all of her grandmother's objects, which we got an EVP that said, "I made them," you know, up on the wall. And she was very dedicated to the memory of her grandmother, and she loved her grandmother, and her father, like, obviously loved his mother. And like, this family was so tight knit, and just to have that grandmother come through and kind of acknowledge the work that the family's continuing to do, and that it's going to keep going through generations, was exactly why we do what we do.
It's a great show, and it's a great team. The modern day Scully and Mulder. Amy and Adam. Thank you guys.
Thank you.
Kindred Spirits is a must-watch TV show on the TLC channel every Friday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central. The season finale is this Friday. Check it out. Amy Bruni, Adam Berry, helping real-life families who are being tormented by paranormal activity in their homes. And if you're a little late to, if you haven't seen the show yet, you can watch all the episodes at TLC.com or on the TLC Go app. Watch the season finale this week and then go back and watch all the rest of them. Catch up, and you will be hooked and you will be scared, as you heard. But don't worry, Amy and Adam got your back. So speaking got in your back, you know I do, you know Chris has got your back, you know TIJ's got your back. You want to hear more paranormal tales and stories? Then check out the latest addition to the Jericho Network, Beyond the Darkness. That's right, premiering Monday, December 19th. Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis of Darkness Radio discuss all things paranormal, joining the Jericho Network, our first paranormal show, and what a pair of experts we got. They are expert researchers. They'll talk to ghost hunters, regular people who've experienced the unknown, all things cryptozoology, Sasquatch, Shadow Man, so much that we've talked about. Dave's taken part in hundreds of investigations, and Tim's experiences date back to his childhood when he was visited by dead relatives. I know you guys are going to love this one. We're going to kick off the Beyond the Darkness show with Beyond the Darkness. It's going to be right here on Talk is Jericho. We're going to talk to Dave and Tim the week of the premiere, Monday, December 19th, Friday, I believe, Friday, December 16th. You are going to hear from Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis when Beyond the Darkness joins the Jericho Network, December 19th. It is going to be terrifying. So there you go. You can actually now be entertained all week long on the Jericho Network at Podcast One, because we've got the hilarious Team Tiger Awesome show every Sunday morning. Then Monday is going to be Beyond the Darkness, featuring all kinds of fascinating interviews, discussions, and experiences related to paranormal occurrences. It's going to scare the crap out of you. Then on Tuesday, smart wrestling discussion and analysis with Killing the Town, Storm and Cyrus. Then you got Keeping It 100 with Conan and his crew, KG, Disco Inferno on Thursdays. All of that on the Jericho Network. And then, of course, Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday. Who's got your whole week wrapped up now, man? You're going to hit the subscribe button on iTunes, leave everyone on the Jericho Network 5-star rating review, and a one big last thank you for listening, and thank you for supporting all the Talk is Jericho sponsors. I couldn't do this show without them or all of you, and that includes the OG sponsor, Amazon. You can find my Amazon links at podcastone.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. I got Amazon links for the USA, UK, Canada, A, and every time you use the Talk is Jericho Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage of the show to help us cover production costs. You can buy anything you want on Amazon. Just go to podcastone.com, click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. No extra fees or hidden charges. Take a picture of what you buy, post it at Talk is Jericho on the Twitter. I will follow and I will retweet it as well. You can also find all my great sponsors at the Killer Deals area on podcastone.com, including ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Get the Max Pack or the Combo Pack and get a second for 50% off. Omaha Steaks, go to omahasteaks.com. Enter my promo code Jericho in the search bar to get the family gift pack for $49.99. How tasty is that? Don't forget DraftKings. Use my promo code Y2J to play for free this weekend with the UFC pay-per-views. And Bowl and Branch, go to bowlandbranch.com. Use my promo code Jericho to save $50 off your first set of sheets. And you got 30 days to return them if you don't like them. You're going to like them. And you're also going to like it on March 15th, 2017, 94 days from now, when Mick Foley joins Talk is Jericho, makes his debut for the biggest podcast ever. That's going to be on March 15th. The countdown is on. I thank you for listening. And keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And coming up this Friday, Sean Waltman, X-Pac, makes his Talk is Jericho debut. And he is as honest as they come. A straight shooter, one of my favorite people in the business. He's going to be here. Sean Waltman, X-Pac, Six-Pac, he's going to be here on Friday. So we will see you then. In the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.